Very good. The next case up then is State versus Teppards. And Mr. Payne, you're present on WebEx. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Thank you. And Mr. Lewis, you are also present on WebEx, correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. We introduce ourselves in the first case of the day. We don't do that for every case, but this is our first WebEx case. I think that you can see we've got five members of the court here in the courtroom, and two members of the court are also on WebEx. That would be Justice Miller Lerman and Justice Funk. With that, I don't have to give any instructions to you about when or when you should not be wearing a mask, because you're on WebEx. Very good. With that, do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Payne, then you may proceed.
May it please the court, Chief Justice. My name is Paul Payne. I'm the public defender for Scottsbluff County. And I think the first thing that I'd like to address here is how the legal landscape apparently has changed since this appeal was originally filed. I think most importantly, State v. Van 306, Nebraska 91 of 2020 overturned the vast majority of cases cited in the defendant's brief. I think prior to Van, my understanding was the burden was on the state to prove that a defendant had waived his right to counsel knowingly, voluntarily, and intelligently. But after reading through Van, it appears that through a presumption that prior convictions did comply with the requirements of the Sixth Amendment, the burden has now shifted to the defendant to prove in the affirmative a negative that the defendant did not knowingly, voluntarily, and intelligently make such a waiver. And I think what's left of this case in that context is, does the journal show the proper waiver at the change of plea? I think that's what I can boil this down to. And it's the defendant's belief that the journal entry from Red Willow County does not show the required knowing, voluntary, and intelligent waiver, and that journal entry shows no proper waiver. And it's our position that that lack of a showing meets the required burden placed upon the defendant.
What exactly, Mr. Payne, do you think is missing?
Well, Your Honor, I think if we look at that journal entry, it's very clear under the arraignment section that the defendant waived jury trial. And it also indicates the plea of guilty was entered knowingly, intelligently, voluntarily. But what it doesn't indicate is that the same was done as far as the right to counsel. I think it's clear on the plea entry, but I still don't know that the defendant advised of and waived rights is sufficient to indicate that the Sixth Amendment was complied with here.
Do we need a verbatim transcript of the arraignment in order to determine whether the waiver of counsel is knowingly voluntary?
Excuse me, I couldn't hear you very well.
I mean, do we need a verbatim transcript from the arraignment to know whether the waiver took place knowingly and voluntarily?
Well, and I think that maybe we do as a consequence of Van. At this point, the defendant is in a position of trying to prove something didn't happen. And frankly, these type of journal entries, I've been looking at them for quite a few years, are really insufficient to do that at the level I think that Van is indicating that they would need to. I think there's
so
just
what no you're, way. Is this correct? What you're saying is if Van had been the law at the time, he might have known he should put on some evidence.
I believe so.
If that had been the law at the time.
Correct. I think the brief when it was written was probably a pretty accurate statement of the law at that point. But I think, you know, the trouble here being that the briefs and the appeal were obviously filed prior to Van. I just don't think there's any way for the defendant to make that required showing under Van in a case like this.
So at the time that of these events, neither the court, the state, nor the defendant was apprised of the law of the future in Van. Is that right?
Correct.
And they behaved according to the law at the time, correct?
Yes.
So if Van is applied in this case, what would be the possible outcomes? To apply it in this case or remand for more information in view of a change of law, or what other options might there be?
I think with this particular case, probably the only appropriate thing to do would be a remand and try to get a transcript of that actual hearing. But obviously, you know, getting a transcript from a 2010 Red Willow County case, I'm not sure how doable that actually is. But I think with the burden shifting and the change in the law, that we've ended up with defendants in a position where, frankly, unless they do have that transcript, there's just no way to prove that their right to counsel was violated, if and so it was.
Wasn't the defendant present? Can't the defendant testify? I didn't have a lawyer.
Well, I imagine they could.
And if they cannot truthfully testify to that, isn't that a problem for the defendant rather than for the state?
Yes, I think it would be. And had Van been the law at the time, that may have very well have been done to have the defendant testify at that enhancement hearing.
So is it your request that this be remanded?
Well, at this point, I think that probably is the appropriate request. Frankly, it's kind of uncharted territory for me, so that's what I think is probably the most appropriate, is a remand and try to see if there is available either audio or some sort of transcript available of that hearing.
The trial court was applying the pre-Van law, correct?
Yes.
And I'd like to hear an argument about, even under the pre-Van law, why this was error. I mean, what we have from the Red Willow County Court says that the defendant was advised of the nature of the above charges. He's advised of the right to counsel, that he waived rights that he was advised of, and he entered a plea knowingly, intelligently, voluntary, if there was a factual basis for the plea found. Doesn't that tell us, even under the pre-Van law, that the defendant was advised of and knowingly waived the right to counsel?
I don't think it does in this particular case. Simply, if we take a look at the other rights waived and how those were put down, when the court recorded what the defendant waived here, they didn't indicate that he waived that right knowingly, voluntarily, and intelligently. And I think that's something that pre-Van, you know, the state had a duty to affirmatively show that was a knowing, intelligent, voluntary waiver. If I recall correctly, some of the case law indicated that there was basically a presumption that the state needed to overcome with some sort of positive proof.
But there's language where the cases say you couldn't presume from a silent record. But is this a silent record?
I don't think it's completely silent, but I don't think it's sufficient.
Because of the absence of the knowingly and intelligently language. Is that your position?
Yes, sir.
What's missing?
I think so. And I think that's the attorney who wrote the brief. I think that's exactly what his point was.
If the court accepted the waiver, doesn't that imply that the court found the waiver to have been knowing and intelligent?
But I think it goes deeper than that. Do we just imply that the Constitution was followed, or do we put that burden on the defendant to prove positively that it wasn't? And I think that's where we're at after Vann, which I think is troubling for those few cases where perhaps the Sixth Amendment isn't properly followed.
I think your time has expired, Mr. Payne. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Lewis, you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. Matt Lewis, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the state of Nebraska. This is a direct appeal of appellant's plea-based conviction of driving while intoxicated fourth offense, a Class 2A felony in Scotts Bluff County District Court. Mr. Tepper assigns one issue in his appeal, that the district court wrongly admitted a record of a prior DUI conviction from 2010 for enhancement purposes at sentencing. Specifically, Mr. Tepper argues that the record in that case is not sufficient to demonstrate a knowing waiver of counsel in the prior case where there was a plea. As discussed by the appellant, since the submission of briefs, this court released its opinion in Vann, ruled the relevant portions of Fate versus Garcia, Ristow, and Nowicki, which are the majority, the main bulk of cases that are cited by both the state and the appellant. In that case, this court said that post-Gideon convictions are entitled to a presumption of regularity, that records of conviction are admissible unless the defendant can show that he or she did not have or waive counsel at the time of the conviction. Per this court in that opinion, that regularity includes an assumption that a prior conviction was obtained in compliance with the Sixth Amendment right to counsel in the post-Gideon era. This was an adoption of the United States Supreme Court's opinion in Park versus Raley, which revisited the burden to establish that a prior conviction was finalized with adequate waiver or provision of counsel. The state believes that the record renders Tepper unable to make this showing given the journal entry in the contested prior conviction. In Park, for example, the respondent in that case did not appeal his earlier conviction, and the same is done here. There was no direct appeal. There was no attempt to revisit the 2010 conviction after the fact. The conviction has long since been finalized. The contested conviction here with Mr. Tepper was nearly 50 years after Gideon. As sort of discussed earlier, additionally, to what was argued in the state's brief prior to Vann, the record is not silent. At the trial level, the state provided a record of that conviction, specifically the county court's journal entry. This established that Tepper was advised of his right to counsel, among others, specifically and enumerated. And then in a separate section, just a couple lines down, it says that he waived his rights prior to his plea in the prior 2010 conviction. This waiver seemingly includes his right to counsel. It is not listed out specifically right by right which rights he waived. It sort of lumps them together with the exception of jury trial. The right to jury trial was specifically listed as one that was waived. That is what the record that was submitted by the state in the enhancement portion of the sentencing hearing showed. What I feel makes a larger difference here is that the journal entries indication that Mr. Teppert was informed of his rights, waived them, but then later also is appointed counsel for the sentencing phase. So I feel that this offers fairly significant proof that Mr. Teppert knew of his right to counsel, waived it just prior to entering his guilty plea, and then engaged in that right for the future proceedings in the same hearing. So I think that
what was the centerpiece of Park v. Raley? Was the centerpiece having to do with not merely advisement of right to counsel, but was it knowingly and intelligently waived? Was that the focus of Park v. Raley?
Knowingly and intelligently waived is the focus, but then also within the context of the presumption of regularity, that, you know, that is the advisement, and then the waiver is something that has been around for, or at least the advisement portion as part of the plea process is something that's been around for a long
time. I guess the question would be, on this record, if we drill down, not just waived, but was it knowingly and intelligently waived counsel? How does the record demonstrate those features, which, as I recall, were central to the initial Park analysis before Park kind of spun out with variations?
Sure. I think that the record, you know, each individual part, the rights advisory and the arraignment part with the waiver, I mean, these things don't operate in a vacuum necessarily. The rights are enumerated up above, and then in the next arraignment section down, it says that those rights are waived. Why the jury trial right is separated out, you know, I'm not entirely sure. But I think that those two parts taken together demonstrate a knowing and intelligent waiver absence of a full transcript. But then also when you have the appointment of counsel, the request and then appointment of counsel for the sentencing portion in the same hearing, you know, moments later, according to the you know, what can be drawn from the journal record, I think demonstrates an understanding, a grappling with that concept, which would lead one to believe that the rights were intelligently and knowingly waived before and then taken on and engaged by Mr. Teppert later on. And it's also worth distinguishing that the standard is preponderance of the evidence by the state pre-Van that those rights were knowingly and intelligently waived. And so this isn't beyond reasonable doubt. I mean, there's not a record here that seems to establish with conclusive certainty that Mr. Teppert did that, but I would say by a preponderance of the evidence, I mean, there is plenty there to go on to the point where the record is not silent. There is elements there that can.
So we would employ a presumption of knowing and intelligent where the record does not explicitly show knowing and intelligent. Is that your argument?
I think in pre-Van, there could be a, you know, I think that would meet the preponderance of the evidence standard that is laid out in the pre-Van case law, that there was the rights advisory and that there is enough in the record to demonstrate that the knowing and intelligent waiver most likely occurred.
Right, so not just waived. If it's waived, we should therefore also presume it was knowing and intelligent. Is that your argument?
Yes.
Thank you.
Unless there are any further questions, the state therefore submits the district court correctly accepted the records of Mr. Teffert's prior convictions for enhancement purposes, namely the conviction for DUI fourth offense, and we ask this court to affirm the judgment of the district court in this case.
And Mr. Lewis, I take it is your position that then this case does not need to be remanded for anyone to put on any further evidence.
I do not believe it does, either post-Van or pre-Van.
Thank you. Do we have time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal, so that concludes.
Thank you.
Arguments in State versus Teppert. Counsel, thank you very much for participating by WebEx. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Collins, And those arguments will take place here in the courtroom. Thank you very much.